Good morning. Welcome to Super Sunday. In the football world, that refers, of course, to tonight's Super Bowl. Earlier this week, our son called and said, "I must tell you about your grandson's prayer last night." I said, "Okay." He is 6 years old. And the prayer went like this: "Dear God, please help all of those who are sick to be well. Please help all of those who are traveling to reach their destinations safely. And please help the Patriots not to win the Super Bowl." So we'll see. But it's also Super Sunday because, well, really every Lord's Day is, of course, but because you are here, those of you visiting with us, and especially for the lectureship this week, this is the most ambitious program in the 81 years of the program that we've had in terms of variety and of features, of new additions to the program. We have 100 children that are pre-registered for the kids' lectureship that is being produced by our College of Education for the second year. We have at least 50 teens who are pre-registered for the teen lectureship. And then, of course, hundreds of others for the regular program. If you do not have a copy of the program, there are some available at the information desk. However, in the lobby of Lloyd Auditorium, as we begin this evening at 7, and of course, you're welcome to come earlier than that, there will be programs, plenty of them available for everyone. And by the way, we have evening services here, and we invite you back for our 5 o'clock service even before that. So it's a great day, a great Lord's Day, and thank you for being a part. Since our emphasis this year is upon the Old Testament book and prophet of Daniel, I'd like for us to look at one of the most notable statements made about a teenage Hebrew slave. I'll return to that in a moment. But first of all, I want to make mention that in our university library, named in honor and memory of our beloved Hope Shaw, beautiful facility that those of you visiting, if you've not had the chance sometime this week, I hope you'll be able to visit. In the library holdings, there is a book by a secular historian that is entitled The 100, The Most Influential Persons in History. Now, again, this is by a secular historian, and so out of the 100, we're grateful that he does mention the Lord Jesus, the most influential person in history. He also mentions the Apostle Paul as having affected history among those who have affected it the most. There are the names, of course, of Columbus and Shakespeare and Lincoln and many others that you are familiar, and he makes the point, these are names that history will not let die. And we're looking this week at a name that the Bible will not let die. For someone who was a young Hebrew captive, perhaps 17 years of age, who is going to spend the entire 70-year length of captivity in Babylon, who is even going to live beyond to see the overcoming of the Babylon Empire by the Medes and Persians. A life of great distinction to have a young man to make the kind of choice and the kind of decision in the face of opposition as a slave is really something. One thing that we note about Daniel, much like Joseph, the decisions that Joseph made in Egypt, he always remembered that he was an Israelite, not an Egyptian. And Daniel remembered that he was an Israelite, not a Babylonian. And how wonderful it is to see someone who could be taken from birth and raised in the way of the Lord and be given the important principles and truths, the values, the convictions that will determine at a very young age who you are, what you're going to do, how you're going to respond to tests and challenges, and to allow that to dictate your character throughout the course of a lifetime. So when Daniel and Shadrach, Meshach, and Abednego, his three friends, are brought in as promising young men to ultimately serve the king after a three-year apprenticeship of getting ready, that includes the choicest foods of the king, the wine of the king. That is where we see a sterling young man speak for his friends and say, please, please allow us 10 days in order to drink nothing but water and to eat nothing but vegetables, and then make your decision because we are not going to defile ourselves by the king's meat or by the king's wine. And so if you could imagine, this working. Susan, you help me, okay? Let's go to our next slide. If you could imagine a young man putting his hand up like that and saying, I cannot do this, and I will not do this. Then you could imagine the kind of situation that we find the young man Daniel in. Four principles that I'd like for us to notice this morning in this particular story. First of all, in saying, okay, Susan, next slide. First of all, in saying that I cannot do this, Daniel makes a decision. And there are various renderings of this particular statement from verse 8 of Daniel 1. He purposed in his heart, he resolved in his soul, but he made up his mind. He made up his mind about what he was going to do even before he was posed with this particular problem. Again, being raised as an Israelite, he would have been aware of the restrictions upon Hebrews or Jewish people in terms of the Leviticus 11 guidelines for food restrictions. He also believed in what he had been taught of what would be the best to prepare him physically as well as spiritually. And so he made a decision about what he would do when confronted with a challenging situation that would challenge his conscience and his convictions. The problem of making decisions is familiar to us. There are some people that are very decisive and very quickly decisive. Sometimes that works to their favor and sometimes not so, because perhaps they've not given as much thought. And then there are people who are very indecisive, and they're always dependent upon someone else to really make the choice for them. I mean, have you been that guy in the line driving through McDonald's, and you waited and you waited and you waited until the very kind attendant said, sir, will you pull out of line and go around the building again and give more thought to what you want to order? I mean, that was an indecisive person that's really holding everybody else up. Daniel was someone who made a decision based upon conviction, based upon instruction, and based upon conscience. And so, first of all, he made a decision. Let's go to the next slide. Daniel also made the right decision. You know, right decisions come on the basis of not necessarily one's opinion, depending on how important the decision is. Right decisions come based upon the knowledge of truth. That's why the Bible is given to us, to know directly from the heart and mind of God what is the truth. And not only in making a decision that would give him peace of mind and would give him power in terms of having been decisive, but also would give him direction, purpose in life, he made a decision based upon what he had been taught. From where he had come, when he left Israel, he did not leave his faith behind. Just like when a university student comes to school, those who have been raised in the faith come to school to enhance the faith, not to leave the faith, not to leave it behind or to lose it. And so when we go out into our world of work, we apply our faith to our work. We use our faith in our work. So in making the right decision, Daniel becomes for us an example of someone who, based upon evidence, based upon truth, based upon instruction, based upon knowledge, based upon the wisdom that comes from that knowledge, he made a decision that he was convinced was the right decision. not a feeling, not an opinion, not an emotion, but a lifelong conviction. And then thirdly, Daniel made a decision fully aware of the consequences of his decision. The steward that is over him, or in some translations the word overseer is used, the one responsible for developing these young men, these four young men, for service eventually in Nebuchadnezzar's court, had a plan for that, wanted them to have the very best, the very finest, even of what the king ate and drank. They knew better. They knew that the things that the king would eat would be meat that had been, first of all, sacrificed potentially to idols, since Babylon was definitely an idol-serving and worshiping country, a kingdom. They could not do that. And so this is one reason why they also believed in the restrictions that were given again in Leviticus 11. But there were consequences. And even the steward is concerned about the consequences. He says, I must present myself before the king, and if you're not your very best, then I will be in trouble. That's when Daniel asks for the 10 days. And then after the 10 days, his appearance and his countenance and everything looked much better than anyone else. And as a result of that, the 3-year diet was put into place according to Daniel's request. He was prepared to deal with whatever consequences might come. He did not know at the time of making this statement or making this decision, making this choice of what might come, but he was prepared for it, to deal with it. So the application obviously applies to us, that we too are faced with decisions and choices that may have consequences. In fact, they do. The consequences sometimes can be in a very positive form. Sometimes they can be in a negative form, even a dangerous form, a life-changing form, a threatening of life form. But truth is truth. And standing firm and standing up for that which is right, for that which is true, not according to man-made law, but God-given law that is eternal, proved to be the mark of a young man, not only of conviction, but of wisdom. And so should it be of us. And then fourthly, the decision that Daniel made, he was prepared to reap the rewards of that decision if it turned out positively. He did not know at the time of making the decision, but he was prepared for whatever rewards might come as a result. Again, when he was viewed very completely by his overseer, the overseer could not dismiss the fact that his appearance, his countenance, his health, his strength, everything about him was different from all the others that were in this program, this 3-year program. A statement made not only about Daniel, but really the other three as well, out of them all, no one was found like Daniel, along with Shadrach, Meshach, and Abednego. What a tremendous compliment that is made of this young man because of his dedication and devotion to what is right and what is true in the eyes of his God. It is true the Babylonians did not know that God, but think about the opportunity that they're going to have to know that God, because they're working from principle, they're working from faith, they're working from knowledge, they're working from instruction, and as a result they have been formed by this knowledge and by this instruction. And so there was an opportunity to show that out of all of them that being considered for this service, none of them looked or appeared like Daniel. That was far more than about appearance. These were men of purpose. These were men of passion, of principle. These were men who are going to exercise tremendous power as a result of their decision. This decision develops in Daniel not only great material rewards. As the story unfolds throughout the book, he is going to continually be elevated. He's going to be in a position of having riches, of having power, of having position and prestige, ultimately to the third position in all of the kingdom, even under Nebuchadnezzar. And yet none of that was really what was important about Daniel, and it did not define him. What defined him was all of the elevation came from his spiritual relationship with God the Father and with what he knew God the Father required of him. And so, like Joseph, the Lord was never away from him. And like Daniel, the Lord was never away from him. So that later, when there are challenges in life from those who oppose him as he reaches the heights of influence in all the Babylonian Empire, like the slide that will reflect being in the lion's den, he was prepared for that because he knew his God extremely well. He prayed to that God fervently, as you know, at least three times a day, with his window that faced in the direction of Jerusalem opened and in full view, even in violation of a man-made edict to worship nothing but the idols of Babylon. It served him well also later in life as a prophet of God, recording the events of this particular book. Daniel proved to be faithful in all the responsibilities and all the relationships and all the opportunities that he had. Let's look at our next slide. There's a beautiful statement in chapter 12 and verse 3 that Daniel writes by inspiration of God. Those who are wise shall shine like the brightness of the sky above. Those who turn many to righteousness like the stars forever and ever. And when you think about it, there are names in world history for which history will not let die. A statement like Daniel 1:8 and a statement like Daniel 12 in verse 3 are two of the reasons why God himself will not allow the name of Daniel to die. When life is over, and when the Lord appears, and when the world melts with fervent heat, the name of Daniel will continue to live. His impact and influence is affecting us even to this moment, and is going to be the basis of our study for an entire week. Someone who lived centuries ago, but who made a choice, who made a decision, made the right choice in view of consequences, but also in view of God providing for him and taking care of him, even when the opponent happens to be a man-eating lion. Now, the question is, what about us? How will we respond to the challenges in our secular, our world of relativism, pluralism, and all the isms that you can imagine? What will we do? Let me ask, if you've made up your mind about who you really are and about what it is that you really believe and what you really think about Almighty God, do you love him with all of your heart and mind and soul and strength? Most in this room have been taught from infancy, and most are eager to hear even more about not only this character, but all other kinds of studies that we will have this week, because we hunger and thirst after righteousness. But is everyone in the room there? Is there someone who has not yet made up their mind about where they stand with God? Have you made up your mind about being tested, how you'll respond? Do you know yourself well enough, as Daniel knew himself, that he is going to respond according to what is the absolute eternal truth of God revealed in his will? Are we willing to make our decisions and choices right in the face of an opposition that is so powerful that even everything about life could be very quickly changed if we do not go along? Are we of the resolute heart and mind, the spiritual heart and mind, to stand in view of opposition? And then are we ready to reap the rewards of someone who stands firm, who stands strong, who stands faithful lifelong? Or even after a period of unfaithfulness comes to our senses, as the prodigal son did and came home to his father, picturing our coming home to God. Where are we? If the answer is yes to the first three of these questions, then the answer will also be yes to the most important of the questions, and that is the fourth one. will you be ready to reap the rewards of making a choice and a decision based upon faith, based upon conviction, and living with the character and courage to live consistently with it all the days of your life? The way that it was said by Daniel in Daniel 1 and verse 8, actually writing about this account, he says, I made up my mind that I would not defile myself by the king's food or the wine which he drank. Great principle throughout the course of his life. And then later, as the Apostle Paul encourages us, he does the very same thing. In a very familiar text that is so popular to so many, young and old and in between, that familiar verse of Romans 12, verse 1, present your body a living sacrifice, holy and acceptable unto God, which is your spiritual service. It's the very same principle. It's the presenting not only of soul, but the presenting of mind and the presenting of body, the presenting of time, the presenting of a process of how do we make not just decisions, but the right decisions that will live in view of eternity. That's the question for us to consider. The Lord Jesus Christ came into the world, yes, to give himself as a ransom for the entire world, and in response to that, establishing his church that is intended to go throughout the world with a simple message of salvation from sin based upon our obedience to him. Believing him and in him. Repenting of our waywardness, our sinfulness, which is ever about us. Confessing our faith in him when we have choices to make in view of opposition. That is a great opportunity that we believe in Jesus and therefore we think and behave the way we do. And then we're baptized into him for the forgiveness of those sins so that we might be washed anew. Life really does begin anew. It begins again as a result of the Lord forgiving us through the shed blood of his beloved Son. That is available to all of us today, and most of us here have gone through that obedient process, and we're striving to live in obedience. But it may be there's someone who needs to come back. There may be someone who needs the prayers of the congregation for some difficulty in life that only you and the Lord know at this point, but your brethren need to know. And for all of us, we need, again, to be reaffirmed that we do not wear the name Christian lightly. We wear the name Christian because in a pagan world, we're strangers and foreigners, just as Daniel was a stranger in Babylon. So are we strangers in a world that does not acknowledge the one true God and is not as concerned about the matters of eternal interest. Let's be different, and therefore let's make a difference, beginning right now as we stand and sing. Just for the cleansing power.